Gosh, it's almost the middle of August 2018. I think we'll be seeing Christmas displays in our favorite department and discount stores very soon, because, you know, Labor Day, just a few weeks, and school starting possibly this week in some parts of the country here in Ohio, a little later in the month, but the back-to-school sales are certainly in full swing, and Halloween stores and Halloween paraphernalia definitely is hitting the retail arena. Of course, when you talk about politics, it seems like every day is Halloween. Of course, we have a president who's been accused of having orange skin and orange hair. And, of course, he recently spoke at the high school in Orange Township, not too far from where we hang our hat here in the beautiful historic city of Marion. Speaking of presidents and presidents of all types of varieties and proclivities and other stuff, we present, after a very, very short sabbatical, our official presidentologist to talk about current events and other good stuff, Dr. Ron Fineman. Ron, you know, as I said, with the current state of politics, are you kind of looking forward to Halloween, or are you like me and you think that, with respect to our U.S. government at the present time, every day is kind of like Halloween?
First of all, good morning, Adam. Of course, I'm very glad to be back after a week away. Yes, I would say every day is like Halloween. The most unbelievable things and statements and actions that are taken. Some of them are funny, and many of them are tragic.
Yes, and we like to giggle about stuff, but a lot of this is no laughing matter. But as I say, laughter is the best medicine. So if I do giggle a little too much and sometimes don't always take things or myself too seriously, that's probably a byproduct of our current society. And maybe it just makes things a little less painful than they already are. Now, with the 2-week span between this show, Ron, and the last show, we probably could spend the whole day talking about all the current events, but we'll just kind of pick the things that we find to be most interesting and most relevant. First, on a very happy note, I didn't bring my choir with me, but I'd like to sing a happy anniversary because your blog, theprogressiveprofessor.com, recently celebrated its 10-year anniversary. 6,066 entries.
As of Saturday, August 11th, yes. It was now, 10 years ago I started it. I can't believe it's 6,066 entries. That's an average of about 1 2/3 a day, if you figure out, for the number of days, about 3,652 days since then. So it's about 1 2/3, I guess.
Yeah, you surely are a prolific presidentologist, to say the least. Now, you've seen three different administrations, and I realize your blog started not during the Obama administration, but if I'm not mistaken, during the end of
the campaign,
of the George W. I guess W stands for Walker. So you were walking away with the first blog during the George Walker administration, he being president, I guess, 43, depending on how you count it, because we have Grover Cleveland, who's either one president or two, depending upon how you count it. But anyway, when you started the blog with Mr. Bush number two as a president, could you possibly envision that 10 years later you'd be writing the same blog, but with Donald Trump, reality show star, businessman, and controversial character, sitting in the White House? Was that even in your wildest dreams?
No, honestly, I mean, I did it because my son David suggested I do it, so I could express myself, and he knew I wanted to speak out. But I don't think even he thought it would go on steadily as it has for 10 years. And I hope to do it at least another 10, because I hope I've contributed to a lot of people's knowledge and understanding of politics and history. And I love doing it, you know.
Now, you've seen three very different presidents. Now, with George W. Bush, we agree. We don't necessarily find ourselves aligning with all of his policies. But we understand he's a smart man, an MBA. We're both baseball fans. He was a part owner of the Texas Rangers, so a coolness aspect there. Certainly, he had good textbook qualifications, and he did conduct himself like a gentleman. We also are fans of his wife, who, just like his mom, recently deceased Barbara Bush, wasn't ashamed to say that she didn't always agree with him on certain issues, pro-choice being one of a few of them. And then we had President Obama. You know, I'm not his biggest fan. I do think there are some redeeming qualities, but by no means would I put him among my favorites. You would, however, put him among one of your favorites, so you did right.
Oh, absolutely one of my favorites. I think the best one since Lyndon Johnson, and Lyndon Johnson domestic. I'm not going to say Vietnam. No, I mean, but I think the last president I really felt in tune with completely, except for foreign affairs, I mean, domestic would be LBJ. Carter and Clinton were Democrats, but honestly, I think they were both disappointing. But I've loved to like Jimmy. I've loved to, you know, I've come to love Jimmy Carter as the years have flown by, and now it's 37 years since he left office. Clinton, I'm less satisfied with as time goes by, but Carter more so. I guess if you live long enough, maybe if you give me another 10 years, I'll like Bill Clinton more when he's 82 rather than 72.
As we've discussed, is probably the best former president ever, and he's still chugging along. He appears to be ageless. He's conquered a life-threatening illness, a cancer. He's still
3 years ago this month, he had cancer. Yeah. I thought, oh, boy, that's the end. And here he's still with us. He's going to be 94 on October 1st.
Still building houses for Habitat for Humanity with his hard hat. So you go, Jimmy.
Yes, I wanted to mention, by the way, if you go back to the very first entry I had when I started in August 11, 2008, it was about the vice presidency before the Democratic convention, and I gave who I thought would be the best choices to be Obama's running mate, and I said Joe Biden was number one, interestingly, and I've always been a Joe Biden fan, and now he's being discussed as the front runner for 2020, at least in polls, because people know him, but also I said Evan Bayh of Indiana was the second choice I would have thought, and it's interesting, I look back at that point, I thought a Republican senator who was leaving the Senate and ended up as Secretary of Defense under Obama for a while, Chuck Hagel of Nebraska, would be a bold choice as a third possible choice because he was really, I thought, quite good and quite independent. Well, of course, Hagel did end up in the administration by left office, and he's been on Fox News Channel, actually, as a commentator, disappointingly in a way, but he makes money at it. But Joe Biden is I was talking about him then, and I'm still talking about him now.
You know, Indiana is an interesting state. Of course, it borders Ohio. Also, interestingly enough, Marion County, Indiana, is where Indianapolis is located. They have a Unigov system like Nashville, Louisville, and Lexington, where the county and the city aren't technically the same, but the government is shared. And, of course, this is Marion County, Ohio, which also is located sort of near the geographical center of the state. So kind of interesting stuff, you know, geography geek like myself. But getting back to what I was going to say, Indiana and vice presidents has quite a long history. We are familiar with Potato Head, as I call him. That, of course, is Mr. Quayle from Indiana, VP under George Bush number one. So I say, you know, we may make fun of the way he spells and some of his guffaws, but I think he's more intelligent than he was given credit for. But he really was kind of a weak vice president. But, you know, he did sit there and he had a nice looking family. So I guess that's okay. Evan Bayh was, if I'm not mistaken, governor of Indiana. Then he became a senator.
Just
like George Voinovich. He was governor of Ohio, previously Cleveland mayor. And then he became a senator. So sometimes you think, well, I remember when I was younger, Ron, I forget who it was, but there might have been James Rhodes, someone who was governor or recently or was current governor of Ohio, wanted to be senator. And I kind of asked my mom, well, aren't you better off being governor than senator? Because there are two senators. Well, senator is a national office and people may be more familiar with senators. So maybe a better path to being president, even though, yes, there are two senators versus one governor. So it is kind of interesting. Plus, in the sparsely populated states, Vermont being an example, because, you know, that's where Mr. Sanders is from, and that's very close to where I went to college and worked previously in broadcasting back in the 80s. They have one rep, two senators, and, of course, one governor. So it's kind of like the representative is the most powerful position in a dense, sparsely populated state like Vermont or North Dakota, Delaware, Alaska, etc. So it is kind of interesting versus somewhere like California or nearby states, Illinois, Pennsylvania, New York, that have a lot of people. Mm-hmm. So a lot of reps, but they each represent a lot of people, but still two senators and, of course, one governor. So interesting stuff there. But anyway, as I was saying, Indiana, of course, now is the home of our current vice president who might find himself being president someday, either by impeachment of his boss, Mr. Trump, or running on his own, or whatever might transpire.
Or resignation of the president, like Nixon did
exactly
44 years ago this week,
Right, and we've had...
I wanted to mention about governor and senator. You know, when I was a kid, when I was being bar mitzvahed, I remember an uncle of mine said, Ronnie, what would you like to do when you, and I was always, even then I was interested in politics. And I said, I'd love to be a U.S. senator. And he said, why not start in the House of Representatives? And I said, I want to start at the top. And he laughed. I remember that. I was 13 years old. And actually, I think being a senator is better. You get more publicity. You don't have to run a state government, which is a burden. It is not an easy job. You basically vote on legislation and talk. And, of course, you know, sponsor legislation. I think it's a much more glamorous job than being a governor, which is a real burdensome job in many states. And, you know, there are those who go from governor to senator or the other way. But the fact is, historically, more governors have been elected president than senators. We've only had a few senators. But I just think senators get more publicity, and they, I think their burden is far less than being a governor.
Right. It depends upon the state. We had Mr. Bush, number two of Texas, a populous state and a state with a lot of area that everybody is familiar with. And
yeah, but Texas has the weakest governorship of any state, so his job was actually not that burdensome. It has very little independent power, the Texas governor.
Right, and it's like with cities, too. In Ohio, we have cities that have a weak mayor, that have kind of a moderate mayor, and some that have a strong mayor. Cincinnati is interesting because it used to have a weak mayor system. When we talked about Jerry Springer and Roxanne Qualls,
yes.
Rather to very liberal politicians who were mayor of a city that's considered to be conservative, but that happens sometimes. They were mayor under the weak mayor system, and now Cincinnati has a more of a moderate to almost a strong mayor system, kind of like Columbus or like Marion, based on how powerful the city council is. Some of the smaller suburbs in the area, I think of Baltimore, Ohio, for example, because I'm familiar with them, and the former mayor is a friend of mine. They have a weak mayor system. The mayor does act as MC at multiple ceremonies, does sign off on policies, but they have a full-time village manager who pretty much runs the government. So it kind of varies based upon the individual location. Columbus or Marion, that I'm more familiar with, is more of that strong mayor system, but obviously council has a lot of power. But states do.
I wanted to bring up a subject, by the way, if I can, about young people thinking of running for president. I noticed suddenly there's a number of House members that are thinking, I don't think they're going to get very far. Only Garfield from Ohio ever went from the House directly to the White House. But I've realized there are a number of people that are younger than any president. Joe Kennedy III, of course, has talked about. He would be age 40, and I'm going to write about this on the blog soon, in 2020. Then we have Seth Moulton, also of Massachusetts, who will be 42, but younger than Teddy Roosevelt when he became president at 42. Jason Kander, who is running for Kansas City, Missouri mayor, would be 39, and there's rumors he's thinking of announcing for president if he becomes Kansas City, Missouri mayor. Mark Zuckerberg at 36 might run. You know, obviously, you know who Mark Zuckerberg is. And also the mayor of South Bend, Indiana, with a really horrible name, Pete Buttigieg, Buttigieg.
Well, that is a name like that. Buttigieg.
They don't say but. It's Buttigieg, but he'll be 38, and he's thinking of running. And I saw now on the news wires, Eric Swalwell of California, congressman, who would be 39, going on 40, is thinking of announcing, and he's been in Iowa. So we could have six people who are under 42, mostly around 40 or even a little younger, and they are eligible to run.
I was thinking
and
Buttigieg.
And also Tulsi Gabbard of Hawaii is another one, 39. Tulsi Gabbard of Hawaii. So it's seven people, mostly from the House.
Is Buttigieg a Buddhist, or is that that's kind of what I was thinking?
No, but what a name, Buttigieg. Yeah. But it's Buttigieg. But oh my God, what a name!
And that would be another interesting stat. We'd go possibly from our oldest president, Donald Trump, is many things, but he's also our oldest president to be elected and start office, not to be in president. Reagan was older, but he previously had 4 years. Of course, we could be going from our oldest president to take office to our youngest president to take office.
We could. If anyone under 42 years and 10 and a half months would be the youngest.
That would
and
certainly.
We've had three presidential candidates who were younger, but they didn't get elected. Thomas E. Dewey and also William Jennings Bryan, but they were not elected. And also John C. Breckinridge. Those are the three that were younger nominees, but they all lost. So it could be interesting if any of these people, mostly from the House, but I would doubt it. I would think they would get very far.
Dr. Feynman and I could talk about presidential stats till the cows come home, so we'll just talk about the highlights. But bottom line is, Ron, as of the 11th of August, you celebrated anniversary number 10 of the ProgressiveProfessor.com blog.
Yes.
So, by the way, listeners, please bookmark it and read it because it's cool stuff. 6,066 entries, and counting. Now, let me ask you this, Ron, as I was talking earlier before we went off on a tangent like we always do.
Yeah.
That's part of the fun
like
of the show.
So.
You started the blog, again, with a president that you don't necessarily agree with policies, but you understand he was qualified to be president. He was a good man. You liked his first lady because she wasn't afraid to indicate she didn't always agree with him. And in general, I honestly think George W. Bush is a bit underrated. He came during some difficult times. He's a businessman, and I think a lot of his perspectives were good. And many issues, many social issues, he wasn't overly vocal if he wasn't necessarily with the status quo. So again, Bush, I guess number two, remained a bit of an enigma. And
well, he's always rated lower than his father, and I don't think he'll ever rate above his father. It's pretty clear George H.W. Bush will always rank higher than his son. While in the case of John Adams and John Quincy Adams, we also would say John Adams is usually rated higher than John Quincy Adams as far as president. Although I like John Quincy more, I always said if I could go back in time, I'd love to have a chance to chat with him about his diary that he did for 68 years, from age 12 to age 80. I would love to talk to him about that.
But bottom line is we do agree that George W. Bush came in qualified. Again, he was governor with a governorship that wasn't necessarily powerful, but it was a large state, both in area and population. He was a businessman, very successful, and he was a baseball guy. That's certainly a cool aspect with both of us being baseball fans. You know, whether or not we agree with his policies, certainly as a man, he had a good textbook qualifications. Then we had a president who also had good textbook qualifications, not as much political experience, but experience as a law professor and a scholar, and a guy with excellent charisma. You know, policies, for the most part, you agreed with most of what he had to say. That would, of course, be Obama. Next to a president who came in with no political experience, who certainly...
And insulting everyone from June 16th, 2015 on. He never stopped insulting. He's still doing it.
Right.
That's the problem.
And someone who we find entertaining, but not necessarily in a good way. Bottom line is, in these three different kinds of presidents, do you find it maybe easier to write the blog with Trump as president because there's so much to say about him that isn't positive? Or would you rather write with Obama as president where you're almost being his cheerleader in some ways and talking more about history? Or someone like Bush where, again, you like him as a man but don't always agree with his policies, but at least understand he came in qualified. What are your thoughts on that? Is there really a favor,
well,
or do you kind of like the variety?
I mean, the difference is I spent 8 years on Obama and about 4 months on Bush, or 6 months, and now a year and a half. I would say writing about someone you admire, although there was a lot of opposition, which I was annoyed by some of the Republicans, you know, so I was upset about that. But it was certainly much more enjoyable writing about someone I could admire. And I really have not felt that way since the Kennedy-Johnson years when I was a college student. You know, because I admire FDR, but I was born at the very end, but I mean, I was a baby. And I admire TR, and I admire Lincoln, but I didn't live through them. So, I mean, it's been a long time to admire someone. And since Kennedy and Johnson, until Vietnam was escalated, I thought they were the best until now. You know, so everybody else had virtues. Nixon had virtues in foreign affairs, but still I couldn't really admire him. And Ford I liked, but he wasn't able to accomplish much. And Carter wasn't very successful. Reagan I thought was overrated. Bush 1 was boring after Reagan, I thought. Clinton was always someone I never trusted too much. I always thought he was Slick Willie, as he was known. So, I mean, I did really enjoy the Obama years, even though it wasn't perfect, because I liked a lot of what he stood for and how he conducted himself.
But secretly, do you kind of like writing about Trump and kind of talking about some of the bad things? Is there a certain evil side of us that you kind of like writing about that negativity? We might snicker a little bit. Do we secretly kind of like writing about someone we don't really care for?
I don't know. All we know is I know it's the system, but I feel Hillary Clinton won the election. I think Al Gore did. I know the Electoral College decides it, but really they won the popular vote, and it annoys me that these two people who would have done things very differently than the second Bush and Trump lost out, and I think the nation lost out because, especially with Hillary, but even with Gore, it was a 540,000 vote lead in 2000. That's the biggest margin until Hillary, you know, and not to become president. So it's very disturbing, and There is talk of having this interstate compact where state legislatures would agree to vote for the winner no matter who wins the state electoral votes, because they could do that. States could do that. But they have to get enough to be able to make it possible. And they've only gained 165 electoral votes in states that would agree to go with the winner of the popular vote. But there's no other way to overcome the Electoral College because it's in the Constitution, but it's so outdated. And I really wish it could be gotten rid of, but it's never going to be repealed. So we have a problem. It's probably going to occur again in 2020 or 2024. I fear that the popular vote winner will lose. I'm just very worried about it.
Also, the number 44 was significant early last week. President number 44 celebrated a birthday. Number 57, happy birthday, Barack. You really do rock. And that will,
yes, and Bill Clinton will be 72 later this month, and John McCain will be 82. God bless him. He's still with us, even though people were saying he was on his way out, and he may be, but he's at least lasting quite a while, and I hope he makes his birthday on August 29th. And in the case of Bill Clinton, it's August 19th.
And also, something I like to talk about regularly would be the 44th anniversary of the resignation of number 37, Richard M. Tricky Dicky Nixon, who was either going to be likely impeached or he did resign. And like you, Ron, I remember watching it on TV with my family and a little bit shocked because I had never seen a president resign before. So history was certainly in the making. And we often, almost every show, we talk about will Donald Trump be sort of forced to resign like Nixon was, or will he actually get impeached? Who knows what might happen, but we do celebrate both of those anniversaries. I know it's been talked about before, Ron, but Obama's only 57. Gosh, he's not much older than I am, goodness sakes. And, yes, you know, he's in excellent shape. He's a young 57. Do you see him running for senator? Maybe, well, we talked about this before, maybe Supreme Court, a cabinet office. Do you think he's kind of done with politics?
Well,
might he go back
Supreme
to
Court.
Might he go back to being a professor like you are? What do you think 10 years from now, Barack Obama at 67, still, you know, not that old, what do you think he'll be doing?
Well, I don't think he'll be running for office where he has to be elected, but there's always the chance, if and when there's a vacancy and we have a Democratic president, that he could be like William Howard Taft, go to the Supreme Court. It's possible. If there's a Democratic Senate and a Democratic president, that could happen. And certainly if he gets picked in the next, like in the next term, he would still be young enough, because you don't want to have a justice that's too old, but he would be in his early 60s by 2021. So, but there has to be a vacancy and all that. But I think that's possible. Other than that, he'll probably focus on his museum and library that's being built in Chicago. It should be ready in 2021, they're saying. So I'm planning to go to Chicago again. I haven't been there in years. Again, sometime in 21 or 22 or 23. And of course, he'll make speeches and make money at it, and he'll write more books and make, you know, all that. I mean, but I don't think he wants the burdens, because really, except for the Supreme Court, we've only had, of course, John Quincy Adams went to the House of Representatives after being in the White House. That's very unusual. Andrew Johnson, when the Senate was picked by the state legislature, was picked for, it lasted a few months before his death as a senator. But other than that, only William Howard Taft actually went to a position on the same level as the president, the Supreme Court. And he was actually Chief Justice, too. So that's not going to happen in this case, I don't think. There won't be probably a new Chief Justice for quite a while if John Roberts stays healthy. But certainly he could match Taft, and I think Taft looks better as a Chief Justice than as president. So, you know, it could be that, but who knows what the future holds.
You did see the blog postings, and I think somebody put that on your Facebook about wanting Biden as president and Obama as vice president. And for once and for all, that isn't possible. Obama cannot be president or vice president ever for the rest of his life.
That's right. Same with Bill Clinton when they asked years ago. He could not. No. But as I advocated, and I got quite a bit of debate, I suggested a ticket of Biden and Kamala Harris of California as a possible ticket. And my son David actually came up with that. And I thought, you know, that sounds like a pretty good thing. He's a real Joe Biden fan too, David. And he also thought that, you know, that if we put Biden up for one term, Wimby wouldn't say, but that he would not go longer, and Kamala Harris would help to bring in minorities, because she has one parent who's from Jamaica, the island, and one from India, so she's Asian and an African-American mixed race, basically, and she's a woman, and she's young, and she's, you know, from California, that he thinks that would be a really good ticket. And some people didn't agree. They said, give up on Joe, he's too old already, and in many ways he is. But then I think of Winston Churchill was in his 80s, and Konrad Adenauer of Germany was, And I think if he stays healthy and if he has a good backup vice president, and God forbid if something goes wrong, I think that could be a very exciting ticket. Biden winning the white working class vote of the Midwest, and Kamala Harris bringing in women, young people, and minorities, and independents, and moderates. I think it could work. But we got a long way to go. And there's a long list, including these young congressmen and one congresswoman and even Mark Zuckerberg, that are flirting with announcing who would be younger than any president. So we have a lot of way to go yet.
Now, Biden could be VP again, right? I guess we never discussed that. Could he be VP?
Well, in fact, I advocated that in 2016. I was on a radio station. I advocated that he should run for vice president for a third term with Hillary, I was suggesting, you know. But it didn't happen. But it got some news coverage, and I got a few interviews out of it. I got noticed because I said that. And then I had some people saying, give up on him already. He's been around too long. But I still think he's a dynamic guy who could unite the country for one term at least.
That is legal, right? As long as you're not president, you can be VP for as many times as
there's
you wish.
There's no limit on vice presidential terms. We've never had anybody more than 8 years. We've had a couple of vice presidents who served different presidents as one term each. But we've never had a third term, but it's not illegal. But the 22nd Amendment prevents a president from more than 10 years in office, 8 by election or 10 by succession in the last half of a term. So I've been saying to people that, honestly, if, let's say, Trump was to leave, I would prefer he leave before January 20th next year, because that would mean Mike Pence would have more than half the term but could only be elected once. But if he became president after next January 20th, he could be there for 10 years in theory, and that's not a pleasant thought. So I'd prefer he have, you know, have like Gerald Ford would have only had one term because he had 2.5 years of Nixon's term had he been elected in 1976.
Yeah, so many news topics we could talk about, Ron, during this time, and we're already yes, about two-thirds done with the show, so I guess I'll just pick a couple things that I thought were interesting. I noticed you put in your Facebook about Uber, and somebody was talking about Uber with you, and you said you feel that Uber is not fair to its drivers, and you don't really trust the background checks, and even though it costs more, you go ahead and use a regular cab when you don't drive your trusty Honda. I think you have a Honda.
Yes, when I'm traveling. That's just me. My son has used Uber.
What do you feel is the issue with Uber? Is it fixable, or do you think that ride sharing will not really be a success? It has too many innate problems, and that we may just go back to a taxi cab system. And I mean, here in Ohio, Uber and Lyft are huge, and they've really revolutionized the whole transportation industry, and I'm not sure how it is in Florida. I imagine it's pretty similar. Do you think that any issues with ride sharing can be fixed, or maybe is it kind of a failed model, or what are your thoughts?
Well, I'm not an expert on this subject, but there have been drivers who have not been checked out who were criminals and assaulted, usually women, not men, of course. So women have more danger. I'm not saying it's a lot, but you never hear about this with regular cabs. At least I've never heard. And regular limousine services. And also, the governments just feel that Uber is run amok. In many cities, they don't even allow it around the world now, or they put all kinds of regulations and restrictions, like in New York City. And, you know, I'm not an expert, but I have never felt that just because it's a little cheaper that that's the whole issue why you do something. But my son David has used Uber. He does it. Look, he's a different person. He can do what he wants. But I've never used it. And whenever I go to the airport, I may pay more, but I use a limousine service that I trust and I know the company. So I mean, I guess it's a money issue, but money should not be the only issue involved, is how I would say.
It's kind of giggling a bit, Ron, and I do apologize. You know me, I never take myself too seriously. You mentioned how we both admire David greatly, what he's doing for environmental activism. Well-spoken person like yourself, certainly. So you were mentioning how you don't agree with David on everything, and again, he's more of an Uber user than you are. I was kind of giggling that he's bearded, and you had a kind of a funny entry on Facebook a few weeks ago about beards and saying you never have a beard.
Oh, yeah, I'm not particularly a beard lover either, and he has a beard, but he has a neat beard. But some people that he knows or I know have much bigger and thicker beards, and I wouldn't say anything, but honestly, I don't like it. But that's you know, what I think I've said to you once before is I don't like tattoos, but I'm not going to tell somebody they can't have a tattoo. You know, it's their personal business. Just like it's a personal business if you want to marry the same gender or you might want to marry a different race, who the hell cares? I can have my view. I can, in my head, think things about people. I don't have to tell them about it, you know, so I'm not going to go around doing it. But I did comment, that's true, on Facebook. That's true.
Yeah, it was kind of funny what it was about, and we weren't really talking about it, I asked the listener, if you didn't see it, go and look at Dr. Feynman's Facebook and find out what I was talking about, because it is kind of amusing. And when I saw the photo...
Well, everybody's an individual.
Yeah.
You know, I don't agree with everything because somebody's my son or,
yeah, when
or
I
whatever.
Just saw the photo of you with your sons, and I saw David there with his beard, I couldn't stop giggling. I mean, I don't know what triggered it.
Well, he looks good, though. He does keep it good. He does keep it well. And it's not as much of a beard as others have. He does have friends who have more, and I don't like it, but I'm not going to tell them that. It's not my business.
Okay, I just this was kind of giggling when I saw that. And you mentioned about Uber, because that's interesting, because that's I think the transportation industry really has been changed. And of course, there have been the issues with the autonomous vehicles. Personally, I would not get into a vehicle driven by anything other than an experienced human being behind the wheel. But I
how
think
do you in, know?
But
how
I think
do you know with Uber.
Yeah,
they don't know that necessarily. They're
yeah,
not
but I think in time,
checked out.
Yeah, I think in time we can have some limited services provided by autonomous vehicles. We're actually going to be trying that in Columbus in the near future. But when it comes to driving in traffic and on a freeway, I prefer a human being, preferably myself. I enjoy driving my own car, so I like to do
I like driving my own car, too, and I just got a new 2018 Honda Accord. I like it a lot.
Yeah, is it one of those Accords built in Marysville, Ohio? We as Ohioans, thank you for your patronage. On to two topics, Ron, which are not as jovial, but very serious and tragic.
We're having a good time, though, yeah.
The recent events in our nation's capital, the white nationalists and the protesters.
Oh, boy, yes. Yesterday, yeah.
What do you think about that? Is it free speech,
well,
or do we need to not allow these kinds of groups?
Well, cannot ban freedom of assembly, unfortunately. I mean, fortunately, I guess, or I wish in a way we could, but we can't ban it. But it turns out only about 24 white nationalists showed up in D.C., and there were thousands of the opposition. I don't know why they didn't show up, but it was really a flop. And luckily, there was no violence in D.C. or in Charlottesville like last year, the tragedy of last year when Heather Heyer was killed by a car, you know, by a person driving a car into a crowd of peaceful marches. So I don't like it, but, you know, the Ku Klux Klan met in Boca Raton when I first moved here from New York. In 1990, they had a gathering in Boca Raton in the city. I didn't go to it, of course, but I read about it, but they said only a small handful of people showed up, as far as supportive of them. So a lot of times they don't get the audience, although they did last year in Charlottesville. I don't like it, but we do believe in freedom of assembly, and we cannot ban one group because then we'd have to ban other groups, and everybody has their own favorite to ban. So you just have to tolerate it and dislike it, but you can't say do anything about it.
As
long as they're peaceful, and you have to have enough police protection.
And also, there have been many shootings in Chicago of late.
Oh, that's unbelievable. A week ago, it was, I think, 11 dead and 60 shot. That's just beyond belief. That's why the White Sox have more trouble getting crowds, because it's on the south side where most of this crime takes place. The north side is where Wrigley Field is. So, I mean, the Cubs are a much more successful franchise generally than the White Sox because the neighborhood is not very good. Just like Yankee Stadium is not the best neighborhood in the South Bronx, although I think it's better than it used to be, but it used to be thought of as a place that you had to be cautious about compared to Shea Stadium for the New York Mets.
Yeah, I'm not sure what to say. It's scary to think the country that I love, and Chicago, a city that I love, not far from us here in central limit Ohio, that there is
It does seem as if tourist areas never have much crime, though. I've been in Chicago twice. It was wonderful. I get the feeling it's only in the quote neighborhoods. It's not really in the tourist areas, which is good in a way, but of course, sad that it happens anywhere. But it seems like tourists are not really marked to be. Generally, victims.
It's interesting. Yeah, Chinatown is considered one of the safest parts of Chicago. I've been there. Yeah, it seemed very safe to me, very clean.
Yes.
But it's not far from some of these dangerous areas, and it's a shame. You shouldn't really have to worry about any part of a city.
Cleveland and Cincinnati? What is it like in Cleveland and Cincinnati for baseball? Are the neighborhoods pretty good nearby?
Yeah, the stadiums are downtown.
I've been to the Cincinnati Stadium, not the Cleveland.
I mean, there are bad neighborhoods not far, but I don't think that the danger is so much that it's going to affect people going there. And Cincinnati, which I'm more familiar with, you can park.
Yeah, I must say the Cincinnati Reds Hall of Fame. I went to visit, and they have of course Pete Rose in it, but he's not in the Hall of Fame. That's the big debate: should he be in the Hall of Fame? And I say yes.
I don't disagree with you there. But yeah.
But he's in the Reds Hall of Fame, you know.
Yeah, we could spend, you know, as we sometimes do, spend a whole show talking about the political side of baseball. So we shall see what happens to Charlie Hustle, certainly one of the greatest pure hitters of all time. I mean, Joey Votto may end up being thought of as a better pure hitter, but we shall see Joey's career.
Yeah, I must say, Pete Rose had a restaurant down here in Boca Raton, and he used to sometimes be there. I never met him, but I heard that, you know, even though he was there, he was always charging for autographs, even if people came into his restaurant. I think that's pretty tacky, but that's the way he is. He's not a nice guy, but he's still a great player.
Right. Interesting character for sure. I think I might have told you this story. Once they were handing out petitions to allow legalized gambling in Ohio, something which failed multiple times, till it finally did pass, and now we have multiple casinos, of course. And at that time, Pete Rose had been in jail, I think, for the tax charge. And I remember I asked I certainly was in favor of legalized gambling, so I signed the petition, and I asked the petitioner, can I sign for Pete Rose, because I think he's incarcerated right now, and that always generated a giggle or two. So, you know, me and my
that's funny.
My sense of humor and never taking myself too seriously. It's kind of the way things go with yours truly. We are talking with Dr. Ron Feinman, the official presidentologist of WWGH Radio, about current events.
A baseball lover like you.
Presidents, past, present, and future. Of course, ramblings, rumblings, tumblings, mumblings, and jumblings about the very beloved Donald J. Trump, current occupant.
Not beloved. I wouldn't go that far. I don't even know if his wife loves him.
Of the White House.
Look what she's done. She's come out against him on his attack on LeBron James. I mean, she backed LeBron James after he was critical and called him low IQ. Which is outrageous, you know. And of course, when he also the issue about CNN on the Air Force One and her part of Air Force One, she's going to watch CNN, not just Fox News Channel. So she's defied him in a number of ways in the last few weeks.
Right. Well, it's good to say what's on your mind. We talked about Laura Bush and Barbara Bush not always agreeing with their husbands, but still being.
But it didn't become public in the same way as this has. It's interesting.
Right.
It's much more public because.
Said, it's been a good time to be in the news media, Ron. All kinds of stuff going on. Never a paucity of topics, to put it mildly. We also celebrated the 10th anniversary of Ron's blog, theprogressiveprofessor.com. Recent 57th birthday of President Barack H. Obama, and the 44th anniversary of the resignation of Richard M. Tricky Dicky Nixon, and remembrances of all that good stuff. With a few minutes left in the show, Ron, I'm sure there's a topic you'd like to talk about, so let us know what you think might be a good thing to go over with our listeners over the next 7 or 8 minutes that you think is an important news
story. On August 10th, I wrote about two Republican presidents' last speeches in office. Of course, I mean, Eisenhower on military-industrial complex, Reagan on welcoming immigrants from all nations. In 1961, Eisenhower, in his farewell address, warned of the dangers of the military-industrial complex having too much power and endangering American democracy by taking Americans to adventurism in foreign affairs. I want to comment on that this idea of a space department or a space force that Mike Pence is talking, so we can dominate, and he uses the word dominate space, totally opposed to, we should not be dominating space. That sounds very militaristic and imperialistic. So I don't think Eisenhower would agree with him, and the space program had begun under Eisenhower, but he worried about the military-industrial complex. And then Reagan, on his last full day as president, before the inauguration of H.W. Bush, on January 19th, he spoke at a ceremony awarding the Presidential Medal of Freedom to Secretary of State George P. Schultz and former Montana Democratic Senator Mike Mansfield, who had served as Reagan's ambassador to Japan across the aisle, a Democratic senator serving as ambassador to Japan. And he spoke Reagan of Lady Liberty, the Statue of Liberty, and the fact that one can go to any other nation and is still seen as a foreigner. But anyone who comes to America from any nation of the world can be greeted and accepted as an American who can contribute to American advancement. He also spoke of the undocumented immigrants who walk long distances just to have a chance and opportunity to earn a living and support their families and how they contribute their labors. This is what he said, that great sacrifice to the betterment of America. And he said, Reagan said that America draws, quote, its strength from every nation of the world and every corner of the world, end quote. If we ever close the door to new Americans, our leadership in the world would soon be lost. And then he said, it's bold men and women yearning for freedom and opportunity who leave their homelands and come to a new country to start their lives over. So, I mean, he would really be incensed about what just happened with that, you know, with that mother and daughter who were being sent back to El Salvador as their case was being heard in court, and the judge in Washington, D.C. ordered them back and threatened that he was going to censure or indeed hold the attorney general, Jeff Sessions, in contempt of court. And I'm thinking, this is what Reagan said in the 80s, and this is what Eisenhower said about the military-industrial complex. These are two Republican, not Democratic presidents, who spoke up in their last speech in public as a president, and look at what they said. And I think Reagan particularly is more now, but both of them, Eisenhower also, I think it's a very interesting comparison to what we're going through now.
So other Republican presidents may share a party affiliation with Mr. Trump, but don't share immigration policies and philosophies with him is the bottom line.
Well, I don't think Trump's really a Republican anyway. He is now, but he was a Democrat. He was an independent. He's a Trump. He's the Trump party. They all say his party's becoming a Trump party. He's not really a Republican. He's been a Democrat much longer than he was a Republican. Although Reagan also, I must point out, was a Democrat further back. That's true. And actually a number of presidents have switched parties. But I'm just saying Trump has no principles at all. Reagan was a Republican for a long while before he became a president. So he had more principles. And Eisenhower was an independent until he decided to run as a Republican. He was flirted with by the Democrats, but he said he wasn't interested in running in 1948, but in 52 he did decide to become a Republican. So, they have much more principle and they look a lot better in today's world based on what's going on now.
Well, Donald Trump certainly is different. Before we say goodbye, Ron,
yes.
After this show that, of course, always seems to fly, can you give
it
our
does,
listeners...
I always have a good time.
Oh,
yeah.
It's always a laugh and a half, for sure. Can you give our listeners a sneak preview of some of the things you'll be writing about in your blog this coming week?
Well, one thing is about these young congressmen and a couple that are not congressmen. One's a congresswoman and a couple of others who might be announcing they're going to run for president. It doesn't mean they're going to be, but we have a group of people there, as I just said earlier, that's about seven that are thinking of running, who, if they were elected, would be younger than Theodore Roosevelt or John F. Kennedy. So that's interesting. I think that's a very interesting point. And also, I probably will write about Michael Avenatti, the lawyer for Stormy Daniels, who apparently is planning to run for president. And I am not favorable to that. I mean, he has a right to run, but I think he's a good lawyer, but I don't really think I would trust him. I think he's an egotist who's trying to draw attention to himself, but he might run. So, and he certainly would be combative against Trump, and so it will make the race more interesting, but I don't see him being the nominee. But honestly, I've made a list up of possible people who could run, theoretically, that I mentioned. And you'll believe it, I figured it out. 54 people have been mentioned. Now, they're not all going to announce. But there's some taking 20 to 25 who announced that it's going to be a crazy race. And, of course, a few will survive and the rest will fall by the wayside. But I don't think we've ever had as many people rumored about, maybe at least 25, but 54 theoreticals that could run, including business people, which I've written about, a few business people, including Zuckerberg is one, but also others, that it's just crazy, how it's going to be. And also the Republicans, it's so clear Kasich is going to run. I mean, I don't think there's any debate that Kasich is going to announce. And I also think, that Ben Sasse of Nebraska, who's strongly anti-Trump but very strong conservative, will also run. And possibly others, like Bob Corker of Tennessee, who's leaving the Senate, is possible as well. And Jeff Flake of Arizona, who's leaving, I think they might announce. I think the best bet is going to be Kasich or Sasse to challenge Trump. But, who knows? It's going to be interesting. And once the midterms are over, it's going to start people announcing, going to Iowa. They're already going now, in fact, as Avenatti did, Iowa and New Hampshire. So, I mean, the race is starting even before the midterms, but way too late November. Oh, my God. We'll be talking about it constantly for the next couple of years.
Do you think Mark Zuckerberg really could be president or senator? Is he really?
I would not support him. I don't like him. I've really turned against him. I think he's very arrogant, and I think Facebook, he's made loads of money, but I think it's a disaster what's happened with Facebook. And I'm not in favor of a businessman again. I think after Trump, we should not, and that includes an attorney who's never been in office. I think you have to have been in office, and Avenatti has never been in office. And, he's good for what he does, but I cannot see him as a serious candidate. I just can't. But, of course, I don't decide that. The people will decide.
Well, whatever happens, it'll certainly be interesting, drama-filled.
Plenty to talk about.
Lots of mudslinging and likely surprises from what we're prognosticating today, 8/13/18. Dr. Ron Feinman, I'm sorry to tell you that the time that we're spending together is coming to a conclusion because the boss, well, I'm one of the bosses, so we all, as a consortium of bosses, say that the stroke of 11 a.m., our show concludes. So we have to say goodbye.
Thank you so much again for inviting me.
And thank you again for joining us. Interesting discussion, the presidential history, of course, possible presidents in the future, ages of presidents, again, anniversaries, your blog, that's most important, of course, birthday of Mr. Obama, and 44th year that is passed since the resignation of Mr. Nixon. Talk to you again soon, Ron. Have a great rest.
Thank you very much.
Have a great rest of your day, and thanks for being on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio.